Today is Tuesday. It is July 5th, 2022. I'm Jim McPherson, and today I'll be reading from the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times, starting with a review of the photos on these two morning newspapers. Above the fold and across four of the six columns in today's New York Times edition, we have a street scene. It shows buildings on the left. They're relatively low in height. To the right, there's a street, but there's a bit of grass and trees are growing between the sidewalk and the street. And on the sidewalk, we see crumpled and mangled aluminum furniture, the kind of outdoor chairs that are easy to carry that you open, and then you can sit in them comfortably. Down in the background, we also see four men who are dressed in military-style uniforms carrying what appear to be heavy weapons. And the caption tells us that these are officers who fanned out Monday in southern Highland Park, Illinois, after an attacker sent people fleeing in a 4th of July parade there. Below that, we have a picture of a man wearing a business suit. He has a cowboy hat on. In his right hand, he's holding a very large coffee mug. In his left hand, a portfolio of some sort. And he's in a room that is made up entirely of glass walls, overlooking a botanical showcase, if you will, nothing but gardening and trees visible in the background. The caption tells us that he is Ken Salazar, the U.S. ambassador to Mexico, who was told to build a relationship with its president. And the headline for this story reads, Biden envoys cozy ties to Mexican leader worries U.S. officials. On now to the front page of the Hartford Courant, where at the very top of the front page we have a relatively smaller photograph of a man who is sitting before a microphone. And he has his arms out as if to make a point. He's wearing a sport coat and a shirt, but no tie. He is Albert Shahadi, brother and co-conservator of Whiting Forensic Institute patient William Shahadi, who testified before the legislature's Public Health Committee in Hartford in November of 2017. The headline for this particular story at the top of the front page of The Courant, after $9 million payout, a push for change. Whiting abuse victim's brother hopes to donate money to improve care. And then below that, we have a larger picture of a woman. She's riding a horse, wearing denim jeans, and she has a blouse with full-length sleeves and red and white stripes across the sleeve and the area of the blouse on the lower torso. Near her neck, there's a blue field with white stars on it. And as if to make the point, she's also carrying a large American flag. She's Haley Scanlon, who rides on horseback through a cloud of bubbles in the 37th annual WILI July 4th Boombox Parade on Monday in Willimantic. The story that goes with this photo runs under the headline, 4th of July Willimantic Style. And we have three smaller pictures that are associated with that. The pictures include members of the Hartford's proud drill team and dance corps, who perform as they march down Main Street in Willimantic. Then we see Barbara McGrath, a patron of the Willimantic Public Library, who carries a boombox with a Reed sign attached. And there's a young girl who waves a flag from the window of a truck. And then over on the left, we have a smaller picture yet. It shows a woman who is standing in front of a building. She has her hands on her hips. She is Susan Hopgood, who recently stepped down as the decade-long chairman of the influential Capital Region Development Authority Board. She's standing outside the XL Center in Hartford, where a Sports Better facility is under construction. On now to the lead story in the New York Times. Russia advances behind brutal barrage, but will its strategy keep working? The Russian and Ukrainian armies have both been badly mauled, raising questions about how long they can keep fighting as they have, particularly the outgunned Ukrainians. This article is by Thomas Gibbons Neff. Russia's capture of the cities of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk a significant victory for Moscow's campaign to conquer eastern Ukraine, demonstrates the success of the Russian military's grinding strategy based on superior firepower and incremental advances. It also raises serious questions about how long either side can keep going like this, particularly the battered and vastly outgunned Ukrainian forces, forced to rely on raw recruits and suffering heavy casualties, along with the mental strain of combat, retreat, and constant Russian shelling. Russia's invasion has taken a brutal toll on its own forces as well, but they continue their slow advance, and with the seizure of Lysychansk this weekend, they have taken control of the entirety of Luhansk province, putting them in a position to push on toward Ukrainian-held cities in Donetsk province. The devastating strategy, relying heavily on long-range artillery, suits the flat terrain and shorter Russian supply lines in the east, but might not work elsewhere. And it remains unclear how far President Vladimir V. Putin intends to press the offensive, or how much more loss of men and material his military can absorb without needing a long pause to rebuild. Ukrainian officials say their goal is to inflict maximum pain on the Russians by forcing them to fight for cities, as happened in Severodonetsk, and to a lesser degree in Lysychansk. But both cities fell, and now there are rising doubts about that approach. The strategy is also divisive among Ukrainian troops, some of whom believe that attempting to hold cities is fruitless. Quote, "For me, human life is more important than the name Lysychansk," Lieutenant Colonel Yuri Bereza, 52, a battalion commander in Ukraine's National Guard, said days before the Ukrainians decided to abandon the city rather than fight block by bloody block as they had in neighboring Severodonetsk. Volodymyr, a volunteer soldier who was one of the last members of his unit to pull out of Severodonetsk in June, said that he had lost more than half his company of around 100 soldiers during the battle. He summarized the battle with an expletive. "What support?" he asked. "There was no support." He nodded, however, at the Ukrainian T-80 tank across the street, saying tank units did come to the soldiers' aid when artillery backup did not. Early in the war, Russian forces attempted to quickly seize Kyiv, the capital, overextended their troops and armored columns, leaving them with little support, and suffered a stinging defeat by the Ukrainians. Moscow then shifted its focus to the mineral-rich industrial Donbass region in the east, Luhansk and Donetsk, and changed its strategy. Now, Russian troops rarely advance without an overwhelming amount of backing, often in the form of heavy artillery bombardment, even if that means that what Moscow captures is in ruins. Ukrainian soldiers say that the shelling lasts for about 5 days, before Russian forces begin testing Ukrainian lines with foot soldiers and tanks. And now, the only national story on the front page of today's Current. It runs under the headline, "Deadly Attack at Independence Day Parade. Person of interest in custody after search, police officials say." This by Michael Tarm, Kathleen Foody, and Roger Snyder of the Associated Press. It is datelined Highland Park, Illinois. A 22-year-old man identified as a person of interest in the shooting during an Independence Day parade in suburban Chicago that killed at least 6 people, wounded at least 30, and sent hundreds of people fleeing was taken into custody Monday evening following an hours-long manhunt, police said. Highland Park Police Chief Lou Jogman said Monday evening that a police officer briefly chased Robert E. Crimo III as he drove about 5 miles north of where the shooting occurred before the man pulled over and was taken into custody. Police declined to immediately identify Crimo as a suspect, but said identifying him as a person of interest, sharing his name and other information publicly, was a serious step. The July 4th shooting was just the latest to shatter the rituals of American life. Schools, churches, grocery stores, and now community parades have all become killing grounds in recent months. This time, the bloodshed came as the nation tried to find cause to celebrate its founding and the bonds that still hold it together. Quote, "It is devastating that a celebration of America was ripped apart by our uniquely American plague," unquote, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said at a news conference. Quoting again, "I'm furious because it does not have to be this way. While we celebrate the 4th of July just once a year, mass shootings have become a weekly, yes, weekly, American tradition," unquote. The shooting occurred at a spot on the parade where many residents had staked out prime viewing points early in the day for the annual celebration. Dozens of fired bullets sent hundreds of parade-goers, some visibly bloodied, fleeing. They left a trail of abandoned items that showed everyday life suddenly violently disrupted. A half-eaten bag of potato chips, a box of chocolate cookies spilled onto the grass, a child's Chicago Cubs cap. Quote, "There's no safe place," unquote, said Highland Park resident Barbara Hart, 73, who had stayed away from the parade fearing a mass shooting, but later ventured from her home. Lake County Major Crime Task Force spokesman Christopher Cavelli said at a news conference, quote, "Several of the deceased victims," unquote, "died at the scene, and one was taken to a hospital and died there. Police have not released details about the victims or wounded." Lake County Coroner Jennifer Bannock said the five people killed at the parade were adults, but did not have information on the sixth victim who was taken to a hospital and died there. One of those killed was a Mexican national, Roberto Velasco, Mexico's director for North American Affairs, said on Twitter Monday. He said two other Mexicans were wounded. North Shore University Health Center received 26 patients after the attack. All but one had gunshot wounds, said Dr. Brigham Temple, medical director of the emergency preparedness area. Their ages ranged from 8 to 85, and Temple estimated that 4 or 5 patients were children. Updated COVID shots are coming. Will they be too late? Is the headline on the front page of the New York Times. The government has a greenlit new vaccines to defend against the latest Omicron variants, but the shots won't arrive until the fall, and cases are rising now. This article is by Benjamin Mueller. Roseanne Renoff, 77, has grown tired of the current generation of coronavirus shots, having, quote, "never been one for a lot of vaccination," unquote. She decided to forego the latest round of boosters after watching vaccinated friends contract COVID-19, even though the doses offer a critical extra layer of protection, quote, "It's just taking another same booster," unquote, Ms. Renouf, a retired nurse anesthetist from Fort Worth, said, quoting again, "They haven't done anything different with them to cover new variants," unquote. But her gripe about the COVID vaccines may soon be settled. American regulators committed last week to updating the 2020 vaccine recipes for this fall's booster campaign with new formulas meant to defend against the ultra-contagious Omicron subvariants, offering Ms. Renouf and other holdouts a fresh reason to change their minds. The Biden administration is betting that the new cocktails, the centerpiece of an effort to drastically speed up vaccine development, might appeal to the half of inoculated Americans who have so far spurned booster shots, a key constituency in the fight against future COVID waves. Vaccine updates are becoming more urgent by the day, many scientists said. The most evasive forms of Omicron yet, known as BA4 and BA5, appear to be driving a fresh surge of cases across much of the United States. The same subvariants have sent hospital admissions climbing in Britain, France, Portugal, Belgium, and Israel. COVID deaths in the United States, which had been hovering for months near their lowest levels of the pandemic, are rising again. In the worst case, epidemiologists have predicted some 200,000 COVID deaths in the United States within the next year. From the World and Nation pages of the Hartford Courant, there's this headline, "Police, motive likely not terror-related in Copenhagen shooting." This article is from News Services. A gunman who killed three people when he opened fire in a crowded shopping mall acted alone and apparently selected his victims at random, Danish police said Monday, all but ruling out the attack was related to terrorism. Authorities filed preliminary charges of murder and attempted murder against a 22-year-old Danish man who will be held for 24 days in a secure mental health facility while authorities investigate the crime, prosecutor Søren Harbo told reporters. Police have said the man was known to mental health services without elaborating. Police have not identified a motive for Sunday's attack inside one of Scandinavia's biggest shopping centers. The suspect, carrying a rifle and a knife, was quickly arrested, and Copenhagen Police Chief Inspector Søren Thomsen said the man also had access to another gun. He said the firearms were obtained illegally, but gave no further details. Now, this headline from the front page of the New York Times: will the abortion debate keep moderate women in Democrats' camp? Worried about inflation and dissatisfied with President Biden, many moderate women have been drifting away from Democrats. Now the party hopes the fight for abortion rights will drive them back. This by Katie Gluick. The dateline is Grand Rapids, Michigan. As Governor Gretchen Whitmer prepared to kick off a roundtable discussion about abortion rights at a brewery recently, Alicia Manili sat at one corner of the table, feeling politically abandoned. Ms. Manili voted for Donald Trump in 2016 before supporting President Biden in 2020, she said. Now she is struggling with both parties, gravely disappointed in Mr. Biden's leadership, but anguished by what she sees as a Republican lurch toward extremism, with little room for disagreement, especially on abortion rights. Quote, "This scares me a lot," unquote, said Ms. Manili, 43, who described herself as a, quote, pro-choice Republican, unquote, in an interview shortly before the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. A few days later, as many Republican officials embraced the far-reaching implications of the decision, she was unequivocal, quote, "This," Ms. Manili said, "is not my party," unquote. After struggling for months against daunting political challenges, Democrats have a new opening to engage moderate women like Ms. Manili, who have been critical of the party's recent victories but are often seen as swing voters this year, according to interviews with more than two dozen voters, elected officials, and party strategists across the country. From the suburbs of Philadelphia and Grand Rapids to more conservative territory in Nebraska, there are early signs that some voters who disapprove of Mr. Biden also increasingly believe that Republicans have gone too far to the right on a range of issues, particularly abortion. It's a dynamic with the potential to shape statewide races and some House contests, and one that crystallizes a central tension of the midterm elections as Democrats test whether efforts to define today's Republicans as extremist can mitigate the political headwinds they confront. High inflation remains the overriding concern for many voters, and Republicans are betting that most Americans will vent about pocketbook frustrations above all else. Mr. Biden has long struggled with an anemic approval rating. Americans also overwhelmingly believe the country is headed in the wrong direction, another troubling sign for the party in power.